always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. It appears the U.S. and Colombia are in a tariff tiff. President Trump promises a tariff on Colombian exports of 25%, going up to 50% after 1 week. This after Colombia blocked U.S. deportation flights into that country. Now, Colombia's president is raising tariffs on U.S. goods by 25%. CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez.
The Trump administration is laser-focused on making sure it can deport as many people who are in the country illegally as possible, especially along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Economics professor Madeline Zabodny of the University of Florida says,
under the Biden administration, we had lots of growing regional cooperation to limit the migration flows north. And so it's pretty important that we continue to work throughout the region to limit those flows.
One of the cities where federal immigration personnel are conducting operations today is Chicago, as WBBM Radio's Andy Dane tells us.
Photos posted to social media earlier today showing Beauvais as well as White House Border Czar Tom Homan speaking with ICE agents in the city. Again, worth noting, Homan told Chicagoans on a visit here in December that raids and arrests would start right here in the city, and it appears that is happening on this Sunday afternoon.
Senate Democrats will attempt to formally denounce the mass pardons of January 6 rioters issued by President Trump. More from correspondent Scott McFarlane.
This will be introduced in the U.S. Senate 1 week after the pardons of violent January 6 offenders, those who rioted and attacked and maimed police officers. It'll be a formal resolution introduced by Senate Democrats, led by Washington State Senior Democrat Patty Murray. It's expected there will be Republican opposition to stop this resolution, but that is a political contrast Democrats want to draw.
Vice President J.D. Vance says a Trump executive order declaring a national energy emergency will help bring down food prices.
How does bacon get to the grocery store? It comes on trucks that are fueled by diesel fuel. If the diesel is way too expensive, the bacon's going to become more expensive. How do we grow the bacon? Our farmers need energy to produce it. So if we lower energy prices, we are going to see lower prices for consumers.
Vance on CBS's Face the Nation. Southern California's weekend rain may help fight wildfires, but CBS Los Angeles' Amanda Starantino tells us there is a drawback.
That's just going to make all this toxic stuff that just melted in everybody's properties, which is just full of asbestos, bad plastics, lead, things that you should not be breathing in. It's going to move to areas that we don't want it to go.
At the Vatican today, Pope Francis warning about, quote, the scourge of anti-Semitism on the eve of International Holocaust Remembrance Day. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Community Stories is taking a holiday break for the month of January. I'm your host, Melissa Kay, and the show will be back in February with more stories from your community.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Clear tonight, a low around 16. Breezy southwest winds. Chance of flurries or light snow on Monday. Highs near 33. Winds out of the southwest up to 35 miles per hour. For Monday night, a few flurries and a low of 16. Thursday, slight chance of snow, 34.
Right now, it's 28.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to WFHR Director's Playhouse this January 22nd, 2025, session 57 of your host and program director here, James J. Maloff. We are joined today by one of the greatest improv artists we have ever seen, award-winning performer, writer, and one of the stars of the British and American versions of Whose Line Is It Anyway? We have Colin Mochrie on the phone with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And we have the hilarious, well, world-renowned hypnotist, comedian, creative, Asad Mekki. Asad, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it, James.
Appreciate both of you being here. We're hanging out today to talk about HipRov, the live show combining hypnosis and improv, two art forms that have mystified and entertained fans, skeptics, and everyone between the worldwide all around, and totally unique comedy experience. You get a chance, if you check out some of the videos of this, if you've seen a little bit of it online already, of seeing how when these two worlds collide, just how creative and fun it can be. We're going to dive into that in a little bit, but we're also going to get to know you guys a little bit, too. That's something we love to do here on the show. So first off, how are you both doing? How's your new year starting off?
So far, so good. Still alive. Always a good way to start the year.
It's a great start. It's a good start. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it really helps with the tour, too. Everything's good. Family's good. Work's being fun. So can't complain.
Excellent. Very good to hear.
Great over on my side. Was just in Hawaii for a little bit of a workation and now back here in Toronto. So it's been a great kickoff to the new year.
Fantastic. Good to hear. Real quickly, I should mention journalistically that I'm an actor. I am an entertainer. I have been doing this since I was 7. I have had the fortune to work in my old stomping grounds at Chicago's Second City and consider it a second home in many ways. So there will be no journalistic integrity with this interview. We're just going to have some fun and talk a little bit about creation and you guys a little and have some fun with this, let the audience know what this is all about. And gentlemen, before we get into this, just a couple of quick questions before we dive into the details of the show. We enjoy to get to know like an origin story of people. Colin, I want to begin with you. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit where you come from?
Sure. I was born in the last century, 1957, Kilmarnock, Scotland. So that's where I started my journey. And then my parents immigrated to Canada when I was 6, to Montreal, lived there a couple of years, and then Edmonton, ending up in Vancouver, where I went to theater school. Then I saw a demonstration of this thing called theater sports, which was improv in a sort of a theater setting. And I thought, well, that looks like it would be fun to do. So I joined the Theater Sports League, and then it just kind of blossomed from there. It started off as a little, nobody knew what improv was at that time. It was like 81, I think 81. So we had to like pull people in from the McDonald's next door, and they would be asking, what's this all about? We go, we don't know. You have to yell things at us. And then from there, it became the big cult thing in Vancouver, became incredibly successful. And then I was doing shows at Expo 86 and then followed my good friend Ryan Stiles to Toronto, where I got involved with Second City. And then through Second City, the producers of Whose Line were doing sort of a cross-country audition tour. I didn't get it that time, but I saw them again a year later and then ended up flying to Britain to do this little show that I thought, well, no one will ever see it, except for British people. And then it was a big hit in Britain, and I was treated like a god. And then I come back to Canada to nothing. And then I decided to do an American version, and then that's where things kind of took off for me.
Hmm. Colin, when did you become a robot? I'm kidding, but a little bit in there, a little bit in your answers there, it became a little robotic, a little bit. Some of the connection here just got a little distorted, but we heard everything, and I appreciate you sharing that, man. Thank you so much. Interesting path, too. Very interesting path for you. Asad, how about for you? Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Thank God we lost him. He really is the worst one out of the two of us.
I'm going to go ahead and pause it for a second.
Sorry. That was
my robot. Oh, no. It's so distorted. What can we do here to clean up this audio, James? Mm. What do you think?
I'm not sure.
It's for a long time. Meditation, visualization, self-hypnosis, they're all very much interrelated. When I was in my first year of university, one of my good friends, Ronnie Katz, went away to Hawaii over spring break. There he was sunburned very badly. He was traveling with his father and his father's friend who used hypnosis in his dental practice. Believe it or not, you can use hypnosis for painless dentistry. painless surgery, chronic pain management. So anyway, this dentist hypnotized Ronnie to take away the itch associated to the sunburn. And I listened to the story, and I was absolutely fascinated by the subject. Fast forward later, I was self-taught. I was hypnotizing my buddies to do wacky things in the dorm rooms. And then from there, I ended up taking the show on the road. That's my solo show. I was performing at colleges and corporations around Canada. A large South Asian group ended up hiring me to perform for their conference on a cruise line. And one of the cruise directors from Carnival Cruise Line saw the show and loved it, and then asked me to perform for the cruise lines. And then from there, I did about 16 years performing for Carnival Cruise Lines and Celebrity and Disney and Royal Caribbean. From there, I ended up wanting to get better at my craft, so I ended up taking courses at the Second City. Oftentimes, the instructors would say, get out of your head, you're too much in your head. Mm-hmm. And what I understood that to mean is stop consciously constructing the comedy. And then I thought to myself, hey, wait a second, I see what they're doing here. They're overloading the conscious minds of the people who are taking these classes, and then they're getting a knee-jerk reaction, a unconscious response, if you will. So I thought, is it possible to hypnotize somebody? Because with hypnosis, you're engaging the conscious mind and then working directly with the unconscious mind. So I thought, is it possible to hypnotize somebody who has no experience in improv and turn them into great improvisers? And the answer has been a resounding yes. And it is possible then to bring in the world's greatest improviser to improvise with these people on stage while they're hypnotized. I mean, the rest is really history. We've toured the show now 150 cities across North America. We've performed off-Broadway to critical acclaim. We were written up in the New York Times, mm-hmm. the Wall Street Journal, Time Out, New Yorker, Forbes. I mean, we're on 150 city. We've done 150 cities tour across North America. This tour, the Yes, It's Real tour, is 57 cities. We're kind of at the midway mark, and now we're coming to Wausau to perform. I believe now this will be our second time performing. Last time we sold out, and I expect that we're going to sell it again.
Yeah, I cannot wait. We'll talk more about the show in a moment, Asad. But I'm curious too, and I'm looking forward to hearing this from both of you guys. But you in particular, when it comes to influences, I was 7 years old. I was watching Robin Williams on Mork and Mindy, and knew exactly what I wanted to do. He took me out of my head, out of my moment, one of the harder days of my life when I was a little kid, and made me laugh. And I didn't think that was possible. And immediately, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to do that for people. When did you know, or what influences did you have that led you down this path? Man, I didn't think it was that bad of a question. I didn't think it was that bad.
No. Sorry, James, was that directed at me or was that?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Asad. Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant to say Asad, direct that towards you. Yes, I'm going to ask you both the same question, though. So,
can you ask that question again? My apologies. I thought it was for Colin.
Who were some of your influences that led you down this path?
Oh, I think Mike Mandel is a mentor of mine and a very famous Canadian hypnotist. And, you know, I started taking classes with Mike probably dating back now to the early 2000s. And he just is an excellent practitioner of hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming. He's also a dear friend of mine. And it was great to be able to work with somebody that was so knowledgeable in the field of hypnosis.
Interesting. Very interesting. And for you, how about comedically? Were there comedians? Were there people that you saw that you felt you could combine these worlds, even though it hadn't really been done before?
I mean, I really enjoyed watching Whose Line. It's an easy leap to understand why I ended up reaching out to Colin to do the show. Because I would laugh out loud watching their stuff. They made me just crack up. And I love the combination of, I think that with Colin, in the show in particular, I see that he really runs the gambit when it comes to comedy. Like one minute it's complete slapstick. The other moment it is the wittiest dry humor, and he's able to shift so seamlessly from all these different genres in comedy itself. It's amazing. It's like a masterclass in comedy. It's amazing to watch.
Hmm. Thank you for that, Saad. Appreciate it. Colin, how about for you? What were some of your early influences?
Oh, I mean, so many. Anyone who would make me laugh, I'd sort of watch and study and see what is it about them that I'm finding funny? What is it that I can steal and make my own? So it would be like, you know, from Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. I was a big fan of the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby movies. I loved the way they would always break the fourth wall and sort of play on their personas. Jack Benny, the Dick Van Dyke Show, Monty Python, the SCTV people. It's a long list.
And, yeah.
Anyone who could, I kind of became I studied comedy, which is, you know, worst thing you can do when you're just watching a movie instead of going, oh, that's really, just sitting there going, oh, that's really funny. How'd they do that? What are they doing there? But it always fascinates me how people's sense of humor can be so different. I mean, in a dramatic script, I mean, everybody reacts the same way to a dramatic event in their life, whether it's losing a relationship or a family member or, you know, all the little and big tragedies we have in our lives. Getting a bunch of people to laugh at the same thing is incredibly hard just because everyone's sense of humor is so personal. So I always find it a challenge to go out and go, okay, I'm going to try to make as many people here laugh at this one thing I'm doing. I don't know if it's going to happen. And sadly, sometimes it doesn't, but we learn from that.
yeah. But it's first off, the names you mentioned, I think I and many people really felt all those names. Charlie Chaplin in particular, the Gold Rush, is a gigantic influence on me, and him as an entertainer alone. I was lucky enough to have grandparents that really, when I told them when I was a kid I wanted to be an actor, I wanted to be an entertainer, they were like, fine, but you're going to sit down and you're going to watch the greats. And I got a chance to do that and study those guys like you're talking about there. And I think when it comes to comedy, too, one of the things that I love about it is not just that it can bring so many people together from so many different walks of life, but the idea of, say, we've all had this hopefully happen to us. We're sitting in a movie theater and we're laughing at something and there's people, complete strangers, laughing at the same thing. Or in a comedy club or something like that. We don't have enough of those moments in society anymore. And when we have them now, they really make an impact. I feel like they really mean something. And you guys to bring that in droves to audiences. Just a couple of more quick questions before we dive into the details of the show. Colin, I was doing my homework on you, and you moved around a lot as a kid, and as did I. And I'm an admirer of impersonators and voice artists and people who can go do accents so well. I've studied that a lot. Phil Hartman, Daryl Hammond, Bill Hader, they all had similar backgrounds as well. I'm wondering, do you think in almost a silver lining kind of way that having a background that moves us around a lot gives us an opportunity to have a be better at these techniques, at accents, at voices, at being able to, you know, just think on the top of a cuff and just, you know, be able to improv like that? I just gave a really bad example of improvising, as I could not come up with a third example right there.
No, that's good. You know, it's the magic too. Very popular. It's becoming very popular these days.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking about this earlier. It didn't help me because, I mean, part of it also sort of amplified the shyness that I had because, you know, I moved around so much and, you know, I sort of get comfortable in one school and then we'd move to another one. Then every once in a while, there'd be a moment where I'd move into a new school and I would go, you know what, I'm going to try this guy, a more confident version of me. And that's when I first started to get into theater and things like that. And, you know, you learn to sort of quickly assess the situation, the new situation we're going into. But yeah, I think it did help in some very traumatic way. I probably need some therapy to actually sort of sort it all out. But yeah, I think it did help. It did help me sort of be able to switch from one thing to another.
It's these, I'm a big believer in silver linings, and I know that looking in my own past and everything and thinking about therapy myself, it's one of those things that I've thought of too, of like taking, well, this came from this. And I think that you see, not think, I in studying these people, and I know that you guys have too, you see so much of this in the backgrounds of some of our favorite entertainers, our favorite comedians and everything, that they are able to do that. I admire that. I think that says a lot about the human spirit and what we're capable of. When it comes to the show itself, and doing something like this together, we'll get into that in a moment, but I'm curious for you guys individually. Asad, I'll ask you first. When did you know this is what you wanted to do? That this is what you love to do? That you, okay, this is going to be my path. This is going to be my focus. I want to do this. You gave us a little bit of that, but it sounds like those are when the ideas occurred to you or you thought about it. When did you feel like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do?
So they talk in neurolinguistic programming about different people and how they take in information. So there's the auditories that take in information vis-a-vis sound, and then the kinesthetics that take in information or the representation that they represent, their prime representation is kinesthetic through touch. And then there's the visual types, right? That they're attracted to things that are beautiful visually. So for me, I think one of the main ways that I take in information is through sound. So sound for me has always been, I guess you would call it my prime representational system, the way that I take in information the best. So for me, when I was performing and listening to the laughs coming through, it was incredible. And that was something that really stuck with me. And then the other part is like, there's the kinesthetic, which is the feeling, right? A lot of people that are personal trainers, people that work with their hands often, they are usually a bit slower when they have conversations. They are in that they're slow when they're speaking and more measured. They also take in information, again, kinesthetically, through feel. And you can listen to that in their language. So there's something called a synesthesia, where there's something, two representational systems getting morphed. So when I'm on stage and I hear that sound, it also feels warm to me, like a warm cushion. So I explain it as like a warm cushion of laughter. Like that is the best way. Like when you're in the epicenter of that warm cushion of laughter, it is like the best feeling on the planet. I feel like I'm completely in the zone. I feel at peace. I feel very happy. Yeah. So that's kind of when I think of what really drew me in was that warm cushion of laughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got goosebumps you saying that, man. Yeah, I felt that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For you, Colin, when did you know this is what I want to do?
I was planning on being a marine biologist. Mm. And looking back on that, I realized it wasn't through any big love of science. I just love the show Flipper. So I think I just wanted to play with dolphins. So I was heavily into sciences. And as I mentioned earlier, I was very shy. And a friend of mine dared me out to try it for the school play. I did. I got it. And I got my first laugh. And that was pretty much goodbye science. I remember that moment. I remember the feeling and immediately thinking, what is this? And I want it all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
So I got into a theater school, and then I saw a demonstration of improv. And at that point, improv wasn't really known at all. You know, there were people like Jonathan Winters. Well, it was Jonathan Winters. I think he was the only one at that point who was sort of known for just just sort of going off with whatever came into his mind. And then Robin Williams a lot later than that. So I was really, that really spoke to me, that art form. And that was something I thought, oh, I want to do this all the time. But I never thought, oh, this will be a career, because there was no outlet for it. We had a theater owner who very kindly gave us a spot in his theater after the main show on the weekend. So we had, from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock to do this improv thing. And it really wasn't until Whose Line that I thought, okay, now this has given me the opportunity to do this all the time. And this is really, I enjoy acting. It's a whole different muscle, but I do enjoy improv. I love not being able to blame anyone else if it goes south. You know, when you're doing television or other things, there's so many cooks in the kitchen, from the directors, the producers, the executives. Whereas on stage, there's just you and your partners. And if the show sucks, it's because you suck. If it goes well, it's because of you. And I like having that control of my destiny.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good. This has been really good. Thank you so much, you guys. We are through the first half. Thank you for putting up on my questions. We're going to take a break real quick. We'll come back with Colin Mockery, Asad Maki, about improv, coming to this Saturday, the 25th at 7:30 at the Grand Theater in Wausau. We're going to talk more about details of the show when we get back here on WFHR's Director's Playhouse.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanction lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Playhouse. I have your host, James J. Maloff, here. I'm joined by Colin Mockery and Asad Maki from Hitprov, coming to the Grand Theater in Wausau this Saturday, 7:30. So excited about this show, you guys. Want to dive right into the details of it with you and get into some just Q&A with the show itself. First off, before we get into the details of it, how did this come together? This is two worlds that you wouldn't normally see together, but here we are. How did this happen? How did this come to be?
Believe it or not, I reached out to Colin through his website with the idea of merging hypnosis and improv together. Jeff Andrews, Colin's longtime manager, picked up the email. We ended up meeting, we had a conversation, and then we threw it up on the main stage of the Second City after their main stage show. We didn't know if it was going to work. We just decided to give it a shot, where I would hypnotize some volunteers, and then Colin would improvise with them. And lo and behold, it was a hit. And we ended up now touring the show 150 cities across North America, 6 months off Broadway, 6 months at Harrah's Casino. And it's been a real pleasure to be able to watch the show truly blossom. It's taken on a life of its own. We've had 12 improvisers in performing when Colin's unavailable to perform. We've had Mindy Sterling from the Austin Powers franchise. We've had Jonathan Mangum from Let's Make a Deal. We've had Jeff Hiller from Somebody Somewhere. The list goes on and on. So it's been really exciting to watch the show blossom in that manner.
That's great to hear, Asad. Colin, for you, when this first got brought to you, what were your thoughts? What did you think of this when you first heard it?
I thought it was ridiculous. I thought, how can this work? And then I said, yes. That was the three-step program I used in my career. It came at a time when, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And one of the fears I had and still have is getting content in what I do and then not challenging myself and making things safe. And I thought, you know what, this cannot be more out of my comfort zone. And working with people I've never met who are in a hypnotic trance and not knowing, truly not knowing what's going to happen. So that kind of made it exciting. And, you know, when Asad and I walked on stage that first time, we really had no idea if it was going to work, like absolutely none. And that was a very exciting feeling.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And, you know, it's one of the things, and I think you touched on this a little bit before, you guys understand as performers, when you don't have a script, when you're out there without a net, the excitement of that and how it almost feels like, well, you don't know what you're going to say. You know, you're on an inside joke with your fellow creators that the audience isn't in on, that they're going to be. That you're going to let them in on, breaking the fourth wall to another degree in some ways. And then to incorporate this part of it, that just is such a cool and unique idea. I forget the name as I'm trying to come up with it, of course, but I think the amazing Jonathan, I think he combined some of these things at one point a little bit, but there hasn't been anything like this completely before. So can we get into the details of what the show is, what people can expect with the show?
Sure. So I'm the master hypnotist on the show. I bring up 20 volunteers. I hypnotize them, whittle it down to the best subjects, then call in mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway, improvises with the people on stage while they're under hypnosis. The show is fast-paced, it's action-packed, and above all else, hilarious, because we got Colin from Whose Line in improvising with some random volunteers from the audience while hypnotized.
That I feel like is a perfect description and yet only scratches the surface, because I've watched some of the videos and I've done my homework on you guys. You really do give a unique show. You really do give. There is no reruns in something like this. Every show is going to be so vastly unique and different, especially when you're traveling all around the country. I can only imagine the different things that come up in different parts of the world and different parts of the America here and all that. That's got to make a real fun part of this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I love is every show is an opening and closing. It's that audience are the only people who's ever going to see this show. And hopefully, I mean, obviously the main point of the show is entertainment, and it's funny and it's fun. But I hope people also realize a lot of people come into the show with misconceptions as to what hypnosis is. And I thought I could probably talk to that better. But, you know, we're not changing these people's personalities. Asad gets rid of that part of their psyche that stops them from doing something, that says you can't do this or you're going to make a fool of yourself. That's gone, and they end up being pure improvisers. And every night, it just, as I watch him put people under from off stage, I go, I don't know how this is working. It's probably best not to even think about it. Just go out there. But it's fascinating.
Do you think that to that point, and I'll ask you both your answers on this. I'll start with you, Asad. Do you think, or rather find people to be more inclined to try improv this way because they're hypnotized, kind of taking their hands off the wheel and letting somebody else take the wheel?
Yeah, so the part of the brain that deals with self-reflection becomes disconnected when somebody's hypnotized. So they no longer reflect on their behavior. They just carry out my suggestions without hesitation and without question, which makes for really good improv. First-time improvisers, as you know, James, they'll hesitate. They'll look nervous. They'll use filler words. None of that happens when people are hypnotized. The good subjects, they will just immediately jump into the scene. They'll be fully committed. And it's like the audience isn't really there. They're just so focused on Colin and I that they give just these incredible performances.
Colin, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We every night we find a superstar, someone who, for whatever reason, just becomes like a great improviser, lots of funny lines. And one night we had this amazing young woman, and afterwards I was talking to her, and she said, "You know, I have crippling social anxiety. I have no idea why I volunteered. That was the best hour of my life. I've never felt so in charge of myself. I never felt so relaxed." So she was planning to go out and take improv classes, find an improv troupe. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, that is not something we thought about, obviously, when we were coming up with the show. But the fact that it sort of opened this woman to the possibility of improvising, I thought that was really cool.
That is so cool. It's one of the things that I think you find, for me, I found, I got into comedy and started doing things at Second City because, like you, I watched the show when I was a little kid and grew up on it. But I, as an actor, I was able to really find my tools in drama and you know, action and all these different things, but I was never good at comedy. I think too much. And I don't think I was born with a funny bone. I'm pretty sure I wasn't. Second City really helped me find that. But the biggest thing that I think they opened up to me was so many people taking classes at Second City or other like the Groundlings or other places. I had classes with attorneys. I had classes with people that work in public service that just wanted to feel more comfortable being in the public eye or talking to people. And part of the point of this show and the mission of this show is to certainly promote and support artists supporting artists. But the other part of it is encouraging young artists and showing them the path and showing them ways that they can do this from other people who have already established it. It's part of the reason why I asked those horrible questions for you guys to put up with and all of this is to give people an idea of this can be done and so many people can do it. And I think that this show that you guys are doing just it almost cuts out the middleman. You're just putting people up there right away and showing you, see, you can do this too.
Yeah, I think it opens up the thing about the hypnotism. It just opens up all these possibilities for you.
Yeah.
And to me, if you're watching a show that combines hypnosis and improv, you can pretty much do anything. Anything is possible. At one point, I'm sure someone thought, well, this will never work. And it does. There's always going to be the naysayers. Sometimes the biggest naysayer is yourself. And once you get past that, you know, just go for it. I always tell people, you know, take improv classes, even if you're not going to be an improviser. And by the way, I highly advise you not to. But it's a great life skill. It's great to be able to, you know, walk into situations without any prejudgment and just play it as it lays and see what happens. It really is a great life tool. And I always recommend take an improv class. It certainly can't hurt you.
Is there anything about the show that from any of the touring you guys have done and the success you've had with this already that really stands out to you? I mentioned a little bit of some of the publications and pieces that have been written about this. The out of the London Times, a celebration of the human imagination. That's such a great line. And it's I think it fits the show so well. Are there moments like that or are there times in live shows that you guys remember that you're like, okay, this was fantastic?
I will speak about the New York Times reviewing us at the asylum. We were, that's the Improv Asylum in New York City. We were about to perform off Broadway and one of the New York Times critics, Jason Zineman, came in to watch the show. And I will tell you, I was so nervous before that show. And I was nervous after the interview, after the show, because I thought, you know, this is kind of make or break because it's the New York Times. And we ended up getting the front cover of the New York Times art section. And in it, you know, some of the quotes were, "It killed." And then the crowd erupted in laughter. So that really, for me, was a pinnacle. For the show and for my career. And to be able to do that in New York, it just speaks volumes about the show
And, you know, I'm just so very happy to be a part of it all.
Hmm. Colin, similar for you?
I've been drunk for most of the tour, so I don't really remember. For me, it's just exciting to do something new. I'm doing what I love. I'm out there improvising, and it has that added layer of, it's a different improv. It's not, I'm not working with people I know, so it's sort of making me hone in to what my improv skills are. Listening and working with someone and knowing, okay, now I'm just going to sit back and see where they go. And now, oh, it's time for me to come in and sort of lead a little. So I think it's really sharpened me improv-wise and kept me fresh, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, those are great notes, too. And I think it's always great when you see somebody who is so good at what they do and they continue to push themselves and want to be even better. And we can all learn from that, no matter what jobs we do or what we do with our lives. Asad, I could not thank you enough for the time. I really enjoyed going down a rabbit hole of you and your career and getting to know a little bit more of you and that. Now I'm going to be a fan and follow your career the rest of wherever you go and whatever you do. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Oh, thanks so much, James.
Colin, I mentioned Robin Williams earlier. I think like a lot of people, Robin Williams is the greatest improv artist I've ever seen. Depending on which Whose Line episode I'm watching, it's either you or Ryan Stiles that is in the number two spot in there. It's two or three. You guys switch spaces all the time in my head. I cannot tell you how great it is to talk with you and share this conversation and this time with you. Thank you so much for it.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you. Although you lost some points when you mentioned Stiles.
I should have done that. I knew I messed up there. I knew it, but we'll fix that in post. We'll fix that. Guys, before I let you go, we have a question that we wrap up every show with. It's a bit of a tip of the hat to the Inside the Actors Studio and James Lipton and that. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why? And I'll start with you, Asad.
Nelson Mandela.
Ooh.
Just read his book years ago. I can't, it was so incredible. The human spirit, unbreakable, and the forgiveness, you know, he was just brutalized by the regime at the time. And he was, just incredibly, forgiving after his incarceration. And I thought to myself, you know, why hold a grudge on anybody? When Nelson Mandela was thrown into prison and was left there to rot, and he comes out and he figures out a way to work with these people that did that to him, I thought to myself, you know what, it'd be interesting to hear his insights and just sit there and talk to him.
Very well said. Great answer. Yeah. Colin, how about you?
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, but, he took your answer, didn't he? He took your answer.
Damn. Oh, I'm going to go with Bob Hope. As someone who went through every version of show business, he started in vaudeville, he did some silent movies, he did the talkies, he could sing, he could. There's a great scene on YouTube with him and Jimmy Cagney in a scene from Seven Little Boys where they do this incredible tap dance. And I think, that was the time where you had to do everything. And just to get sort of, I do feel he kind of stayed in a little too long, and that's one of my worries. Mm. So I would have said, I think I'd like to have the coffee and say, when do you think you should have stopped doing this? Because I'm going to take your advice on that.
Mm-hmm. I really study MCs a lot. I think Bob Hope may have been the greatest MC we'll ever see. He was such a natural at it. And that's a great answer. It's fantastic. This has been a great conversation. Thank you both so very much. We're going to make sure you guys have a full house and a big crowd at the Grand Theater this Saturday, 7:30 for Hipprov. You can get your tickets at grandtheater.com, grandtheater.com. And we'll be selling this show, talking about it on our morning shows and other shows as well. Guys, enjoy yourselves. Break a leg out there. Safe travels getting here. We'll see you soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Just a gigantic thank you to Asad Mekki and Colin Mockery for joining us today, talking about HIPROV. Fun time. Just want to take this time to remind the audience that not only does Director's Cut turned into Director's Playhouse with a bit of the revamp there, but this show has become more and more popular thanks to all of you out there. And this show is made up of you. So if you are an artist, if you are a creative, any type, we want to hear from you. Reach out to me, james.maloff@civicmedia.us. You could, of course, direct message us on our Facebook pages, call up at our front desk at 715-424-1300. Any type of creative out there, musician, comedian, whoever you might be, we want to have you on the show. Again, thank you to the boys for joining us. Be sure to get your tickets at grandtheater.com. That is grandtheater.com. Get those tickets for HIPROV coming this Saturday, the 25th at 7:30 to the Grand Theater right in Wausau, Wisconsin. We'll be back with another Director's Cut for you very soon right here on 97.5 FM. 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief, just in, a mediator in Qatar says an agreement has been reached to release Israeli hostages and allow Palestinians to return to North Gaza. That eases the first flashpoint in the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Hamas will hand over three hostages before Friday, and Israel will allow Palestinians to go back to northern Gaza. President Trump is issuing a 25% tariff on goods from Colombia, which refused U.S. deportation flights. Colombia responded by raising tariffs on U.S. goods 25%. CBS's Camilo Montoyo Galvez.
For the Trump administration, foreign policy is now guided by a deep desire to accomplish its immigration agenda.
Correspondent Nicole Skanga tells us the Trump administration today launched an immigration raid blitz in Chicago and elsewhere.
According to multiple law enforcement sources, it's part of a multi-day operation spanning across the United States.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Clear tonight, a low around 16. Breezy southwest winds. Chance of flurries or light snow on Monday. Highs near 33. Winds out of the southwest up to 35 miles per hour. For Monday night, a few flurries and a low of 16. Thursday, slight chance of snow, 34.
Currently 26 degrees.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir. Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have updates on important state Supreme Court cases involving the outcome of a November 2024 North Carolina Supreme Court election and whether Pennsylvania can count mail ballots with missing dates. First in North Carolina, where after two recounts, a race for Supreme Court justice is separated by 734 votes, with 5.5 million ballots cast. Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs was declared the winner over Appeals Court Judge Jefferson Griffin, but Griffin refused to concede and appealed to invalidate as many as 60,000 voters. Griffin's challenge includes voters with felony convictions, despite North Carolina's returning citizen rights restoration. He and the North Carolina GOP also challenge voters with incomplete registration information, some of whom are even elected officials and have voted for years. Wednesday, the Carolina Journal reported that the North Carolina Supreme Court refused to hear the case in a 5-1 decision, sending it back to Wake County Superior Court to consider Judge Griffin's complaints. Back in October, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court refused to rule on whether on-time mail-in ballots missing a signing date could be counted. Of the two challenges filed, the ACLU's argument that rejecting the ballots is a violation of the state constitution's free and equal elections clause will be considered. No trial date has been set. We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. Morning show at WFHR. Maybe you wanna give me kisses sweet. Ah, that voice. Laura, Beth, and James here with you. Thanks for joining us, everybody. How adventurous of an eater are you? The site Taste Atlas ranked the 100 grossest foods in the world based on 390,000 online reviews from tourists. Most of the top 10 sound pretty gross, and Nordic countries dominated. Mm-hmm. Not surprising.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But is there anything on the list that you would try? We'll go ahead and find out, and we want to hear from the audience as well on this one.
424-2600.
Okay, so I'm going to say this up front. I will try any food item one time.
Good to know.
Food item. Glad you specified.
I do not limit that to just food items, but for this conversation, I will.
Blood pancakes shows up first on the list. Pancakes made with onions, spices, and reindeer blood. They're popular in Sweden and Finland, but the average rating from tourists was 1.6 out of 5.
Yep.
Well, I mean, my dad and I used to sop up the juice left over from steaks that we would make with bread. So
yeah, it's well, and it's one of those things. It's a needless addition that back when they didn't have spices, they used for flavor. But like, there's spices now. Just put cayenne in it or something.
Yeah.
Blood plat or blood pate. I'm sorry, blood pate.
Yeah, no. See, I draw the. I will try a pate, but I hate them.
I want to just get the description in real quick. Dumplings with reindeer blood, Sweden and Finland again.
Oy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all wrong.
Yeah, yeah, that's just all kinds of wrong.
So that's all kinds of wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It's...
Svede. That's just half a sheep's head boiled and severed with mashed potatoes. It's a traditional dish in Iceland.
Oh, that actually doesn't sound so bad. Mm. That's just meat. It's just it's head meat.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. Yeah. It's head meat.
Head meat is funny. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's just head meat. It's meat. You're eating meat, and yeah, it might be looking at you, but you're eating meat. It's fine.
You will of steel when it comes to food, right?
I will try any food item one time.
Deep fried silkworms. Seasoned with salt and pepper, they're popular in Thailand.
Okay, so crunchy.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, crunchy. Okay.
So a little crunchy, salty, high protein
snack.
Not too
much difference from like eating grasshoppers, right?
Right. It's probably the same as like fried crickets or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chapu lele. This is a Chilean bread made with potatoes and flour.
How is that
on this list?
Yeah,
that sounds perfectly reasonable. Yeah. I will eat 10 of them today.
See, now, because it's on this list, it makes me wonder what... There's got to be something.
It's a texture thing.
There's got to be some weird way
potato bread.
It is made, or I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Whatever.
That one actually worries me the most on the list because it is
suspicious.
So blank. Yes, it is so...
Where's the ew?
Yeah, yeah. Jellied eels. They're an old-school street food in England dating back to the 1700s. Mm-hmm. The flavor is described as unique.
I mean, they do have eel in, like, sushi and stuff. So people are, like, eating fried eel already.
Is this fried?
Doesn't say. Doesn't say.
It says jellied, right?
Jellied, yes.
I'm thinking, lutefisk.
Oh, my gosh.
Is
that's
it like
totally
the
what
eel,
it's like, isn't it?
Eel version of lutefisk, which I... Yeah, no.
I don't think your food is ever good if they use the same description word as my sister does to describe me to people. Unique. Like, I don't feel like that's good.
No.
I don't feel like, Jimmy's unique.
I thought you were going to go with jellied, and I was very concerned.
Ramen burger. It's the only American one in the top 10. A chef in Brooklyn came up with it in 2013. The buns are made of fried ramen noodles.
That doesn't sound so bad.
I'd eat it with a fork.
Sour curry made with fish entrails. It's traditional in southern Thailand.
What's sour about it?
Mm.
Is it just that it's entrails? In which case, I'll eat with a spoon?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know.
If the fish is trying to get rid of it, why would I want to eat it?
nice, yeah. Artichoke salad in Greece. They boil the artichokes to make them tender, then cut them up, add lemon, mustard, garlic, and dill.
That doesn't sound bad.
Yeah, would eat a whole bowl, sure.
Yeah.
The only other American food that made the top 25 was frog-eyed salad in Utah. It's a pasta salad made with custard, Cool Whip, and canned fruit, but not actual frog eyes.
Oh. That's where I draw the line. Absolutely not. I do not eat whipped cream salads. Don't make me do it.
Come on, I'll do it. That's one I'll do.
That's hilarious to me. Yes,
you'll try every food.
All this other stuff, except you were fine.
I hate fluff. I hate like the marshmallow fluff salads. Oh God, they make me so sad. Just take the whipped cream out and the marshmallows out, and I would eat a bowl of the fruit.
Four American dishes made the top 100. Tuna casserole, chocolate-covered bacon, chicken a la king, and chicken wriggles. It's a pasta dish with roots in upstate New York. Chicken wriggles. Although many variations exist, it typically consists of chicken, rigatoni, and a hot or sweet peppers in a spicy cream and tomato sauce.
None of that sounds bad to me.
No, I would eat all of those things. Yeah. Maybe it's because we're American.
That's my favorite noodle, rigatoni.
Also, I would eat almost anything, so yeah.
Well, that seems all right. Actually, not a horrible list.
No, I was expecting a lot more. So there's like... What's the name of the fermented shark they bury it and they have it salted and it cures for like 5 to 10 years? I want to say, I know it's Scandinavian. I can't remember the country. That's where I draw the line. Absolutely not.
You have to try that or look that up. Anybody that tries any of these or anything, please let us know what you think. Canada got late on the list with fiddlehead. Fiddleheads are a...
It's harvested, you can forage those.
I just wanted to say fiddleheads.
It's an aromatic, it's kind of oniony.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
We are looking forward to coming back with another whole hour of show for you. We're looking forward to kicking it off with our good friends from the Southland County Humane Society. Denise is going to join us with our Pet of the Week. Looking forward to that. We'll have some entertainment news. We got the Oscar nominations that kicked off this morning. Grab those for us. We'll get into all that coming up.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Seems everywhere in this state, housing has just gotten so expensive. Our current president ran on promises to help the middle class, and I'd like to know what he's going to do about the housing shortages. I went through the executive orders. I read through the speech transcript a couple of times. Nothing he really said or did in the first couple days has anything to do with helping the middle class.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail... Good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Where are you at with dome stadiums?
Oh, love them. Snow games are awesome, but it's also a risk of injuries and everything.
Give me a dome anytime. I don't want to see elite athletes running on snow like it's me playing out there and tripping and slipping. I want to watch those guys run. I want the receivers to run and catch their passes. I want to see great athletes being great athletes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Blue Monday has been a thing ever since a British psychologist came up with it 20 years ago.
Today is a day to rewrite the lyrics to Blue Christmas.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'll have a Blue Monday when it's cold.
Nice, nice. That is my new favorite thing.
Yes.
Right there. That was awesome.
See you in the bumpers.
Weekdays from 8 to 10, right here on locally grown radio.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. A Middle East flashpoint apparently defused. A mediator in Qatar says an agreement has been reached to release three Israeli hostages. And in return, Israel will allow Palestinians to return to northern Gaza. The deal eases the first bump in that ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. A statement from Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu says the hostage release will take place on Thursday and confirms Palestinians can move north on Monday. On another front, the White House says Israel and Lebanon have agreed to extend the deadline for Israeli troops to depart southern Lebanon until February 18 under the Israel-Lebanon ceasefire. Netanyahu earlier said he's thankful President Trump is releasing to Israel 2,000-pound bombs that President Biden had held back.
Thank you, President Trump, for keeping your promise to give Israel the tools it needs to defend itself, to confront our common enemies, and to secure a future of peace.